Matter cannot be inflamed. Inflammation is fear, an excited state of mortals which is not normal. Immortal mind is the only cause, therefore disease is neither a cause nor an effect. Mind in every case is the eternal God good. Sin, disease, and death have no foundations in truth. Inflammation as a mortal belief quickens or impedes the action of the system because thought moves quickly or slowly, leaps or halts when it contemplates unpleasant things, or when the individual looks upon some object which he dreads. Inflammation never appears in a part which mortal thought does not reach. That is why opiates relieve inflammation. They quiet the thought by inducing stupefaction and by resorting to matter instead of to mind. Opiates do not remove the pain in any scientific sense. They only render mortal mind temporarily less fearful, till it can master an erroneous belief. Note how thought makes the face pallid. It either retards the circulation or quickens it, causing a pale or flushed cheek. In the same way, thought increases or diminishes the secretions, the action of the lungs, of the bowels, and of the heart. The muscles moving quickly or slowly and impelled or palsied by thought represent the action of all the organs of the human system, including brain and viscera. To remove the error producing disorder, you must calm and instruct mortal mind with immortal truth. Etherization will apparently cause the body to disappear. Before the thoughts are fully at rest, the limbs will vanish from consciousness. Indeed, the whole frame will sink from sight along with surrounding objects, leaving the pain standing forth as distinctly as a mountain peak, as if it were a separate bodily member. At last, the agony also vanishes. This process shows the pain to be in the mind, for the inflammation is not suppressed, and the belief of pain will presently return unless the mental image occasioning the pain be removed by recognizing the truth of being. A hypodermic injection of morphine is administered to a patient, and in 20 minutes the sufferer is quietly asleep. To him there is no longer any pain. Yet any physician, allopathic, homeopathic, botanic, eclectic, will tell you that the troublesome material cause is unremoved, and that when the soporific influence of the opium is exhausted, the patient will find himself in the same pain unless the belief which occasions the pain has meanwhile been changed. Where is the pain while the patient sleeps? The material body, which you call me, is mortal mind. And this mind is material in sensation, even as the body, which has originated from this material sense and been developed according to it, is material. This materialism of parent and child is only in mortal mind, as the dead body proves. For when the mortal has resigned his body to dust, the body is no longer the parent, even in appearance. The sick know nothing of the mental process by which they are depleted, and next to nothing of the metaphysical method by which they can be healed. If they ask about their disease, tell them only what is best for them to know. Assure them that they think too much about their ailments and have already heard too much on that subject. Turn their thoughts away from their bodies to higher objects. Teach them that their being is sustained by spirit, not by matter, and that they find health, peace, and harmony in God, divine love. Give sick people credit for sometimes knowing more than their doctors. Always support their trust in the power of mind to sustain the body. Never tell the sick that they have more courage than strength. Tell them rather that their strength is in proportion to their courage. If you make the sick realize this great truism, there will be no reaction from overexertion or from excited conditions. Maintain the facts of Christian Science, that spirit is God and therefore cannot be sick, that what is termed matter cannot be sick, that all causation is mind acting through spiritual law. Then hold your ground with the unshaken understanding of truth and love, and you will win. When you silence the witness against your plea, you destroy the evidence, for the disease disappears. The evidence before the corporeal senses is not the science of immortal man. To the Christian Science healer, sickness is a dream from which the patient needs to be awakened. Disease should not appear real to the physician, since it is demonstrable that the way to cure the patient is to make disease unreal to him. To do this, the physician must understand the unreality of disease in science. Explain audibly to your patients, as soon as they can bear it, the complete control which mind holds over the body. Show them how mortal mind seems to induce disease by certain fears and false conclusions, and how divine mind can cure by opposite thoughts. Give your patients an underlying understanding to support them and to shield them from the baneful effects of their own conclusions. Show them that the conquest over sickness, as well as over sin, depends on mentally destroying all belief in material pleasure or pain. Stick to the truth of being in contradistinction to the error that life, substance, or intelligence can be in matter. Plead with an honest conviction of truth and a clear perception of the unchanging, unerring, and certain effect of divine science. Then, if your fidelity is half equal to the truth of your plea, you will heal the sick. It must be clear to you that sickness is no more the reality of being than is sin. This mortal dream of sickness, sin, and death should cease through Christian Science. Then one disease would be as readily destroyed as another. Whatever the belief is, if arguments are used to destroy it, the belief must be repudiated, and the negation must extend to the supposed disease and to whatever decides its type and symptoms. Truth is affirmative and confers harmony. All metaphysical logic is inspired by this simple rule of truth, which governs all reality. By the truthful arguments you employ, and especially by the spirit of truth and love which you entertain, you will heal the sick. include moral as well as physical belief in your efforts to destroy error. Cast out all manner of evil. Preach the gospel to every creature. Speak the truth to every form of error. Tumors, ulcers, tubercles, inflammation, pain, deformed joints are waking dream shadows, dark images of mortal thought, which flee before the light of truth. A moral question may hinder the recovery of the sick. Lurking error, lust, envy, revenge, malice, or hate will perpetuate or even create the belief in disease. Errors of all sorts tend in this direction. Your true course is to destroy the foe and leave the field to God, life, truth, and love, remembering that God and His ideas alone are real and harmonious. If your patient, from any cause, suffers a relapse, meet the cause mentally and courageously, knowing that there can be no reaction in truth. Neither disease itself, sin, nor fear has the power to cause disease or a relapse. Disease has no intelligence with which to move itself about or to change itself from one form to another. If disease moves, mind, not matter, moves it. Therefore, be sure that you move it off. Meet every adverse circumstance as its master. Observe mind instead of body, lest aught unfit for development enter thought. Think less of material conditions and more of spiritual. Mind produces all action. If the action proceeds from truth, from immortal mind, there is harmony. But mortal mind is liable to any phase of belief. A relapse cannot in reality occur in mortals or so-called mortal minds, for there is but one mind, one God. Never fear the mental malpractitioner, the mental assassin who, in attempting to rule mankind, tramples upon the divine principle of metaphysics, for God is the only power. To succeed in healing, you must conquer your own fears as well as those of your patients and rise into higher and holier consciousness. If it is found necessary to treat against relapse, know that disease or its symptoms cannot change forms, nor go from one part to another, for truth destroys disease. There is no metastasis, no stoppage of harmonious action, no paralysis. Truth, not error, love, not hate, spirit, not matter, governs man. If students do not readily heal themselves, they should early call an experienced Christian Scientist to aid them. If they are unwilling to do this for themselves, they need only to know that error cannot produce this unnatural reluctance. Instruct the sick that they are not helpless victims, for if they will only accept truth, they can resist disease and ward it off as positively as they can the temptation to sin. This fact of Christian Science should be explained to invalids when they are in a fit mood to receive it, when they will not array themselves against it, but are ready to become receptive to the new idea. The fact that truth overcomes both disease and sin reassures depressed hope. It imparts a healthy stimulus to the body and regulates the system. It increases or diminishes the action, as the case may require, better than any drug, alterative, or tonic. Mind is the natural stimulus of the body, but erroneous belief, taken at its best, is not promotive of health or happiness. Tell the sick that they can meet disease fearlessly if they only realize that divine love gives them all power over every physical action and condition. If it becomes necessary to startle mortal mind to break its dream of suffering, vehemently tell your patient that he must awake. Turn his gaze from the false evidence of the senses to the harmonious facts of soul and immortal being. Tell him that he suffers only as the insane suffer from false beliefs. The only difference is that insanity implies belief in a diseased brain, while physical ailments, so-called, arise from the belief that other portions of the body are deranged. Derangement, or disarrangement, is a word which conveys the true definition of all human belief in ill health, or disturbed harmony. Should you thus startle mortal mind in order to remove its beliefs, afterwards make known to the patient your motive for this shock, showing him that it was to facilitate recovery. If a crisis occurs in your treatment, you must treat the patient less for the disease and more for the mental disturbance or fermentation, and subdue the symptoms by removing the belief that this chemicalization produces pain or disease. Insist vehemently on the great fact which covers the whole ground, that God, Spirit, is all, and that there is none beside Him. There is no disease. When the supposed suffering is gone from mortal mind, there can be no pain, and when the fear is destroyed, the inflammation will subside. Calm the excitement sometimes induced by chemicalization, which is the alterative effect produced by truth upon error, and sometimes explain the symptoms and their cause to the patient. It is no more Christianly scientific to see disease than it is to experience it. If you would destroy the sense of disease, you should not build it up by wishing to see the forms it assumes or by employing a single material application for its relief. The perversion of mind science is like asserting that the products of 8 multiplied by 5 and of 7 by 10 are both 40, and that their combined sum is 50, and then calling the process mathematics. Wiser than his persecutors, Jesus said, "If I by Beelzebub cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out?" If the reader of this book observes a great stir throughout his whole system, and certain moral and physical symptoms seem aggravated, these indications are favorable. Continue to read, and the book will become the physician, allaying the tremor which truth often brings to error when destroying it. patients unfamiliar with the cause of this commotion and ignorant that it is a favorable omen may be alarmed. If such be the case, explain to them the law of this action. As when an acid and alkali meet and bring out a third quality, so mental and moral chemistry changes the material base of thought, giving more spirituality to consciousness and causing it to depend less on material evidence. These changes which go on in mortal mind serve to reconstruct the body. Thus, Christian Science, by the alchemy of spirit, destroys sin and death. Let us suppose two parallel cases of bone disease, both similarly produced and attended by the same symptoms. A surgeon is employed in one case, and a Christian Scientist in the other. The surgeon, holding that matter forms its own conditions and renders them fatal at certain points, entertains fears and doubts as to the ultimate outcome of the injury. Not holding the reins of government in his own hands, he believes that something stronger than mind, namely matter, governs the case. His treatment is therefore tentative. This mental state invites defeat. The belief that he has met his master in matter and may not be able to mend the bone increases his fear. Yet this belief should not be communicated to the patient, either verbally or otherwise, for this fear greatly diminishes the tendency towards a favorable result. Remember that the unexpressed belief oftentimes affects the sensitive patient more strongly than the expressed thought. The Christian Scientist, understanding scientifically that all is mind, commences with mental causation, the truth of being, to destroy the error. This corrective is an alterative, reaching to every part of the human system. According to Scripture, it searches the joints and marrow, and it restores the harmony of man. The matter physician deals with matter as both his foe and his remedy. He regards the ailment as weakened or strengthened according to the evidence which matter presents. The metaphysician, making mind his basis of operation irrespective of matter, and regarding the truth and harmony of being as superior to error and discord, has rendered himself strong instead of weak to cope with the case. And he proportionately strengthens his patient with the stimulus of courage and conscious power. Both science and consciousness are now at work in the economy of being according to the law of mind, which ultimately asserts its absolute supremacy. Ossification, or any abnormal condition or derangement of the body, is as directly the action of mortal mind as is dementia or insanity. Bones have only the substance of thought which forms them. They are only phenomena of the mind of mortals. The so-called substance of bone is formed first by the parent's mind through self-division. Soon the child becomes a separate, individualized mortal mind which takes possession of itself and its own thoughts of bones. Accidents are unknown to God or immortal mind, and we must leave the mortal basis of belief and unite with the one mind in order to change the notion of chance to the proper sense of God's unerring direction and thus bring out harmony. Under divine providence, there can be no accidents, since there is no room for imperfection in perfection. In medical practice, objections would be raised if one doctor should administer a drug to counteract the working of a remedy prescribed by another doctor. It is equally important in metaphysical practice that the minds which surround your patient should not act against your influence by continually expressing such opinions as may alarm or discourage, either by giving antagonistic advice or through unspoken thoughts resting on your patient. While it is certain that the divine mind can remove any obstacle, still you need the ear of your auditor. It is not more difficult to make yourself heard mentally while others are thinking about your patients or conversing with them if you understand Christian Science, the oneness and the allness of divine love. But it is well to be alone with God and the sick when treating disease. To prevent or to cure scrofula and other so-called hereditary diseases, you must destroy the belief in these ills and the faith in the possibility of their transmission. The patient may tell you that he has a humor in the blood, a scrofulous diathesis. His parents or some of his progenitors farther back have so believed. Mortal mind, not matter, induces this conclusion and its results. You will have humors just so long as you believe them to be safety valves or to be ineradicable. If the case to be mentally treated is consumption, take up the leading points included, according to belief, in this disease. Show that it is not inherited, that inflammation, tubercles, hemorrhage, and decomposition are beliefs, images of mortal thought superimposed upon the body, that they are not the truth of man, that they should be treated as error and put out of thought. Then these ills will disappear. If the body is diseased, this is but one of the beliefs of mortal mind. Mortal man will be less mortal when he learns that matter never sustained existence and can never destroy God, who is man's life. When this is understood, mankind will be more spiritual and know that there is nothing to consume, since Spirit, God, is all in all. What if the belief is consumption? God is more to a man than his belief, and the less we acknowledge matter or its laws, the more immortality we possess. Consciousness constructs a better body when faith in matter has been conquered. Correct material belief by spiritual understanding, and spirit will form you anew. You will never fear again except to offend God, and you will never believe that heart or any portion of the body can destroy you. If you have sound and capacious lungs and want them to remain so, be always ready with a mental protest against the opposite belief in heredity. Discard all notions about lungs, tubercles, inherited consumption, or disease arising from any circumstance, and you will find that mortal mind, when instructed by truth, yields to divine power, which steers the body into health. The discoverer of Christian Science finds the path less difficult when she has the high goal always before her thoughts than when she counts her footsteps in endeavoring to reach it. When the destination is desirable, expectation speeds our progress. The struggle for truth makes one strong instead of weak, resting instead of wearying one. If the belief in death were obliterated and the understanding obtained that there is no death, this would be a tree of life known by its fruits. Man should renew his energies and endeavors and see the folly of hypocrisy, while also learning the necessity of working out his own salvation. When it is learned that disease cannot destroy life, and that mortals are not saved from sin or sickness by death, this understanding will quicken into newness of life. It will master either a desire to die or a dread of the grave, and thus destroy the great fear that besets mortal existence. The relinquishment of all faith in death, and also of the fear of its sting, would raise the standard of health and morals far beyond its present elevation, and would enable us to hold the banner of Christianity aloft with unflinching faith in God, in life eternal. Sin brought death, and death will disappear with the disappearance of sin. Man is immortal, and the body cannot die, because matter has no life to surrender. The human concepts named matter, death, disease, sickness, and sin are all that can be destroyed. If it is true that man lives, this fact can never change in science to the opposite belief that man dies. Life is the law of soul, even the law of the spirit of truth, and soul is never without its representative. Man's individual being can no more die nor disappear in unconsciousness than can soul, for both are immortal. If man believes in death now, he must disbelieve it when learning that there is no reality in death, since the truth of being is deathless. The belief that existence is contingent on matter must be met and mastered by science before life can be understood and harmony obtained. Death is but another phase of the dream that existence can be material. Nothing can interfere with the harmony of being nor end the existence of man in science. Man is the same after as before a bone is broken or the body guillotined. If man is never to overcome death, why do the scriptures say, "The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death"? The tenor of the word shows that we shall obtain the victory over death in proportion as we overcome sin. The great difficulty lies in ignorance of what God is. God, life, truth, and love make man undying. Immortal mind governing all must be acknowledged as supreme in the physical realm, so-called, as well as in the spiritual. Called to the bed of death, what material remedy has man when all such remedies have failed? Spirit is his last resort, but it should have been his first and only resort. The dream of death must be mastered by mind here or hereafter. Thought will waken from its own material declaration, I am dead, to catch this trumpet word of truth. There is no death, no inaction, diseased action, overaction, nor reaction. Life is real, and death is the illusion. A demonstration of the facts of soul in Jesus' way resolves the dark visions of material sense into harmony and immortality. Man's privilege at this supreme moment is to prove the words of our Master. If a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. To divest thoughts of false trusts and material evidences in order that the spiritual facts of being may appear, this is the great attainment by means of which we shall sweep away the false and give place to the true. Thus we may establish in truth the temple or body whose builder and maker is God. We should consecrate existence not to the unknown God whom we ignorantly worship, but to the eternal Builder, the everlasting Father, to the life which mortal sense cannot impair nor mortal belief destroy. We must realize the ability of mental might to offset human misconceptions and to replace them with the life which is spiritual, not material. The great spiritual fact must be brought out that man is, not shall be, perfect and immortal. We must hold forever the consciousness of existence, and sooner or later, through Christ and Christian Science, we must master sin and death. The evidence of man's immortality will become more apparent as material beliefs are given up and the immortal facts of being are admitted. The author has healed hopeless organic disease and raised the dying to life and health through the understanding of God as the only life. It is a sin to believe that aught can overpower omnipotent and eternal life, and this life must be brought to light by the understanding that there is no death, as well as by other graces of spirit. We must begin, however, with the more simple demonstrations of control, and the sooner we begin, the better. The final demonstration takes time for its accomplishment. When walking, we are guided by the eye. We look before our feet, and if we are wise, we look beyond a single step in the line of spiritual advancement. The corpse, deserted by thought, is cold and decays, but it never suffers. Science declares that man is subject to mind. Mortal mind affirms that mind is subordinate to the body, that the body is dying, that it must be buried and decomposed into dust. But mortal mind's affirmation is not true. Mortals waken from the dream of death with bodies unseen by those who think that they bury the body. If man did not exist before the material organization began, he could not exist after the body is disintegrated. If we live after death and are immortal, we must have lived before birth, for if life ever had a beginning, it must also have an ending, even according to the calculations of natural science. Do you believe this? No. Do you understand it? No. This is why you doubt the statement and do not demonstrate the fact it involves. We must have faith in all the sayings of our master, though they are not included in the teachings of the schools and are not understood generally by our ethical instructors. Jesus said, "If a man keep my saying, he shall never see death." That statement is not confined to spiritual life, but includes all the phenomena of existence. Jesus demonstrated this, healing the dying and raising the dead. Mortal mind must part with error, must put off itself with its deeds, and immortal manhood, the Christ ideal, will appear. Faith should enlarge its borders and strengthen its base by resting upon spirit instead of matter. When man gives up his belief in death, he will advance more rapidly towards God, life, and love. Belief in sickness and death, as certainly as belief in sin, tends to shut out the true sense of life and health. When will mankind wake to this great fact in science?